Today's episode of Stir-Fried Stochasticity is brought to you by blind thrust faults, which, it turns out, are not inappropriate or incorrectly performed lewd acts, though it is true that they lurk unseen, waiting to make the earth move for you. Greetings, fellow land-dwelling mammals. My apologies for the embarrassing case of podstipation that I've been having getting episode 3 of this podcast out. I've had quite a lot of life to deal with lately, what with my tight work and commuting schedule, spending several days tearing apart every storage space in the house looking for some forms that the tax people insisted they needed, care and cleanup of a Clostridium-infected dog, who is doing much better now, thank you, a visit by the miraculous Puff the Magic Possum Trinity, and of course the usual unprovoked attacks by rampaging killbots and ninjas. It doesn't help that today's paper was also difficult for me for a number of reasons. For one thing, it's from the Letters to Nature section of the journal Nature, which appears to mean that they don't give the authors room for a nice, neat paper with nice, neat, well-defined introduction, methods, results, and discussion sections that would have made the paper much easier to follow. Instead, the authors were required to cram everything into a single solid mass of words in 3 pages, plus 1 page of pretty pictures. This still might not have been a big difficulty, but Earth science is also outside of my educational range, so I've had to work to pick up the terminology properly and to try to recognize the significance of what's presented. Normally, I wouldn't be doing papers from the journals Nature or Science, not because there's anything wrong with them, but because Nature and Science are sort of like the Time and Newsweek of scientific publications. Anything that appears there has probably already gotten plenty of attention, and I kind of wanted to focus on more overlooked publications. Still, this one was recommended by the Minister of Roctology here at the Asylum for the Sufficiently Nerdy. And after reading the title and abstract, I couldn't resist trying to tackle a paper that would allow me to say, Los Angeles sucks. Today's paper is Bowden, G. Thatcher, W. Stein, R. S. Hudnut, K. W. and Peltzer, G. Quote, tectonic contraction across Los Angeles after removal of groundwater pumping effects, unquote. In the journal Nature, 2001, volume 412, pages 812 to 815. No executive summary this time. The long delay in getting the episode out was not because the paper was especially long and complicated, though it did take me a while to reach the point where I believe I understand it. After the 1987 Whittier Narrows and 1994 Northridge earthquakes in Southern California, it became apparent that blind thrust faults were a major earthquake hazard in the Los Angeles area. A fault is just a place where two landmasses are moving against each other. If you imagine two landmasses as gigantic trucks, a strike-slip fault would be where they are sideswiping each other. The famous San Andreas fault is this kind of fault. A thrust fault is a head-on collision with one landmass being shoved under the other. A blind thrust fault is where the part of the landmasses that are smashing into each other don't actually show up obviously at the surface. Basically, instead of a big obvious crack in the ground, you might just get a little bit of a row of hills or a lump. Whatever is left after the Minister of Roctology gets done tearing apart this explanation is free for other geologically inclined folks listening in to stomp on. After these two earthquakes, a network of Global Positioning System, or GPS, units was set up around the Los Angeles region to monitor movement of the ground, in hopes of spotting where the ground was moving over time and finding where the buried faults are. In this study, the authors are examining conclusions from a previous study that used the GPS data. They used INSAR data to help determine how reliable the GPS data was. INSAR in this case is not the International Society for Autism Research, although the idea of having a bunch of autistic savants using their unusual ability to focus on the detail to study small variations in geographical data is intriguing. Here, INSAR is Interferometric Side Aperture Radar. These are satellite-mounted radar units that measure distances just like the radar in the movies that show the distance of to the approaching enemy plane, UFO, giant rubber monster coming to stomp on your city, or whatever. The difference is that these can measure distance between the satellites and the ground extremely accurately, to the point that they can detect movement in millimeters. It turns out that the satellites show much of the Los Angeles region moving up and down seasonally, particularly around the Santa Ana-Anaheim region, almost as though the ground were perhaps slowly breathing, asleep, dreaming of the day when it will awaken and devour Disneyland to satisfy its ravenous hunger! Ow! Sorry. I'm okay now. Anyway, the movement correlates with water pumping records for the area, causing the land to sink during the dry months when they're sucking the most water out, then rising partway back up during the cooler seasons when water is allowed to build back up. The authors here compared the satellite and GPS data, and they noticed that a lot of the GPS stations are being affected by the repeated inflation and deflation of the land. Using the ones that appear to be outside of the affected area, they estimate that Los Angeles is being slowly and mercilessly squished by about 4.5 millimeters per year by the effects of the earthquake-causing thrust faults, quite a bit less than the previous paper estimated. The rest of the motion they saw seems to be caused by pumping of water and oil in the area, and a little bit of small strike slip faulting here and there. The movement caused by the pumping, incidentally, causes up to 55 millimeters of motion each year in some areas. If I was doing an executive summary and wanted to give you all PowerPoint poisoning, right now I'd have a slide up with the following bullet points. 1. The previous study overestimated the amount of squishing Los Angeles was being subjected to because they were messed up by Los Angeles sucking, specifically water and in some places oil. 2. Future additions of GPS tracking stations should be careful to put them in places where less sucking is going on. 3. Total motion caused by human activity here is more than an order of magnitude more than is caused by the actual earthquake-causing activity in some places. Bonus. Los Angeles sucks so much that it's sinking into the ground at an average rate of 12 millimeters per year. For those of you who, like me, went to public school, order of magnitude is the fancy erudite way of saying move the decimal point over. An order of magnitude bigger means 10 times, two orders of magnitude means 100 times, and so on. And after all of your patient waiting, that's all there was to this paper. Certainly interesting and potentially useful, especially if you have anything to do with Southern California, but you might be bothered that there wasn't more of this after this long of a wait. However, as promised, I will also take a moment to reveal to you
the ultimate goal of all science.
I'm really not supposed to tell outsiders. I mean, who knows what might happen if this information falls into the wrong hands. However, I guess if you've listened this far, I can probably trust you. Just look around and make sure nobody with the wrong hands is hanging around, okay? If there is, please stop the audio until you can shoo them away. Okay, are they gone? Good. All right.
The ultimate goal of all science
is actually the same no matter what kind of science you're doing. Whether it's particle physics, industrial microbiology, annelid psychology, or any other kind of flavor of empirical naturalism, and it can be summed up in 3 words. Contrary to what you may have heard, those 3 words are not total world domination. That's really more of a vision statement than a goal. No, the goal is simply this: maximum reliable certainty. Not just maximum certainty. If you want that, you really don't want science, you want a religious cult or a fringe political group, where you can be absolutely certain that, say, supernatural forces will protect you, definitely, from being mauled when you jump down into the cage to preach to the lions at the zoo. Or that taking all the money away from rich people, or abolishing all taxes and regulations will solve all economic problems. Out here in the real world, there is virtually always some uncertainty, so good scientists test the heck out of their science to find out just how certain they can be of the results. Annoyingly, this can cause the scientists problems with the general public. In the end, the scientist may report something like, "We are 95% certain that in 83% of Sprague Dolly rats acting as models for advanced toenail cancer, application of the experimental treatment results in some improvement on Tuesdays during a full moon as long as the experimenter is left-handed." When the scientist reports something like this, he or she is probably very confident of exactly what they say, because they've thoroughly tested it. To the less scientifically aware public, though, this unfortunately still sounds like, kinda, sorta, a little bit, we think, maybe. which is probably why desperate news media will turn this into "Scientists cure cancer with amazing pedicure breakthrough!" While the public, with its natural human discomfort with uncertainty, is meanwhile busy listening to a confident-sounding huckster who wants to sell them all cancer-curing magical miracle magnet water, patent pending. And that, my loyal listeners, is how we scientists keep the general public from catching on to our nefarious plans to develop inexpensive energy sources, cure diseases, eliminate starvation, build moon bases, and invent the long-overdue flying cars and jetpacks for everyone. And speaking of long overdue, I hope you've enjoyed this long overdue episode number 3 of Stir-Fried Stochasticity. I grovel abjectly before you all and beg forgiveness for my tardiness. I'm hoping to pick up the pace and get 2 or 3 more episodes out this month. That's September of 2009, in case you're listening to this later. I'd welcome any encouragement or suggestions that you might have. I'm currently considering a multiple paper episode or two on basic microbiology topics, just in case some of the microbiology students who have just started the fall 2009 semester might find them useful. I do take requests, though, so please feel free to write in, either on the blog, www.bigroom.org, via email at epicanis@bigroom.org, or if you have an instant messaging account at jabber.org, Google Talk, or other service that uses the same protocol, you can contact me through there at epicanus@enzymestew.dogphilosophy.net. I even gave in and connected my Laconica server to a Twitter account. That's at epicanus. This has been episode 3 of Stir-Fried Stochasticity. Los Angeles sucks! Water and oil. Episode 3, that makes me so happy I could just sing! The hills are alive, and they're getting hungry. They haven't been fed in 1,000 years. Ah!